no longer provides probable cause for search and arrest because the odor might be legal hemp. These arguments are made even when, as here, the defendant never asserted to police that the odor was hemp, even when there is no specific evidence suggesting that the substance was hemp, and even in the absence of any showing that Wisconsin motorists are, in any significant numbers, keeping raw hemp in their vehicles and smoking it.
Counsel, you use the word strong odor. Sechrist uses the word unmistakable. What's the difference, and why do you say strong rather than unmistakable?
Because Sechrist also uses strong. One of its holdings, and the holding that's most apt to this case, concerns when the driver and sole occupant of the vehicle is in a vehicle in which the odor of marijuana is strong. And the holding is, the strong odor of marijuana in an automobile will normally provide probable cause to believe that the driver and sole occupant of the vehicle is linked to the drug.
And so, you think that's the holding of the case?
I think that's the holding that's most applicable to this case, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think it's right on point.
Counsel, at what point was Moore under arrest?
Moore was under arrest when there was an assertion of authority by the officers to conduct the search.
What was he under arrest for?
He was under arrest. He was informed that he was under arrest for the odor of marijuana. However, the officers had other indicia supporting arrest in this case as well.
So if someone can be under arrest for the odor of marijuana, what do you do with the fact that this isn't 1999 when Sechrist came down, that this is 2023, and when most of the states around us, marijuana is legal, when we know that the odor of marijuana lingers, it's not something that just, we all know that, it doesn't just go away. So what do you make of that? So how, you want us to say that you can now, in 2023, arrest someone for the odor of marijuana when you have no idea when the marijuana was actually present. So the crime is what? Possession of marijuana. But you have no idea when they would have possessed it, right? So what do we do with that?
Well, there are several responses to that. First of all, marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance in Wisconsin still. That remains the thing.
Yes.
If you go to Illinois, if you go to Minnesota, and you purchase marijuana and you bring it in your vehicle, you are committing a crime.
Right.
So the odor continues to be probable cause for search and arrest because here in this case, the odor was of raw marijuana, which even more than burnt marijuana indicates the presence of marijuana itself because it is there. It's not something that's lingering in the vehicle.
Okay, except it wasn't there. So you have a problem with that, but in this case it actually wasn't. There was a tiny little bit. So probably there was marijuana in that car if it smelled like marijuana, but it wasn't there when they searched it. So the facts of this case actually belie your point.
No, I mean, respectfully, I think that there was marijuana there. They did find
some seeds and
marijuana.
Shake, a tiny
they
little bit.
They did find shake in the vehicle, and apparently enough that the odor was present.
Okay, you think those officers could smell that time? What? How much of it was there again?
0.00000,
right?
Zero,
I mean, seriously.
No.
Come on. You know that right?
What I do know is that the circuit court in this case made factual findings about what the officers did and did not detect. The first officer, Officer Abel, detected the strong odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle. The second officer confirmed the detection by the first officer.
Right. So let's
that
give them
factual
correct credibility. Fine. That was done by the. But what I'm saying is, what if marijuana was in that car that morning in Illinois, and now today, like it smelled like marijuana because there was marijuana in the car, but it wasn't illegal. What was the crime? Right. We have to have a crime. So well, what do you do with that?
Certainly. I mean, my understanding is that this stop took place in Wood County, in the middle of the state.
Yes, and there's no marijuana in the car at the time that would have smelled up the car, that they could have smelled it from outside the car at the time they were stopped.
Right.
He was stopped.
They detected the odor of marijuana. That's a factual finding from the circuit court.
So we don't. So what you're you're not quite answering my question. What you're saying is we shouldn't be concerned with the fact that it's 2023. We shouldn't be concerned that CBD is also legal and smells like a lot. It is marijuana. It's the same plant. So we shouldn't be concerned about all the legal ways that someone can have marijuana smell, just smell, because there's nothing else. We shouldn't be concerned with that. We should just go with our, you got an odor, therefore you could be arrested for possession of marijuana. Right?
Yes, yes.
That's what you're arguing.
Right. Based on the odor of marijuana. And the odor continues to be an indication of illegal activity because it is still a Schedule I illegal substance in Wisconsin. It's also illegal, now this is in the context of a vehicle stop, remember, where you have only this one individual in the car, the driver. It's also illegal to operate a motor vehicle with any detectable amount of marijuana in your system. So, I mean, those two facts.
Well, right, the stop was for speeding here, though. They got him out of the car. They asked him all kinds of questions about whether he's impaired. There is no indication in this record that he was impaired. So you're absolutely right. If they had stopped him for speeding, he seems impaired in any way. He smells like, he didn't even smell like marijuana. They're not saying he had ingested the marijuana. They're saying it was raw. So I don't know how that helps the argument about him being impaired.
Yeah, no, there does not appear to be any evidence of impairment in this case, per se.
Okay.
But again, he is the only individual in the vehicle under Sechrist. If Sechrist remains good law, now, of course, this court could overturn Sechrist, but to do that, you would need to have a showing that the standard that's established in Sechrist is unworkable in practice. And I don't think that we have that on this record. In fact, here, there's not even an assertion that hemp was found. And more importantly, the suspect did not assert that the odor was from hemp. And of course, when confronted with some sort of evidence of guilt, if the individual doesn't respond, well, it was hemp, then why would the officer believe that it was him?
Because he responded that it wasn't his car, and in fact it didn't list to him, so he had no idea what would have been in the car, potentially.
Sure. No, that's definitely a relevant fact in this instance, yes.
Counsel, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Please.
Do you think Sechrist did something different than the standard Fourth Amendment probable cause, the standard probable cause analysis that we would do for arrest?
No, ultimately, I don't believe that it did do anything different. It didn't set a standard for probable cause that's significantly higher than probable cause itself. Mm-hmm. In fact, it equates the standard that it's set with probable cause. I do think that because one of the holdings is that the odor of marijuana alone is sufficient for an arrest if it's connected to the individual, I think that it's important for circuit court judges to be certain that the officer made a clear and confident identification of the odor as marijuana. And that's why we have the unmistakable requirement.
And I understand, obviously, we've got cases where we've addressed similar type situations, and those are important. But often in these types of cases, I go back to, what's the law? And the law, at the end of the day, is what the U.S. Supreme Court has laid down for the standards for arrest, right? That what a reasonable law enforcement officer... there's a probable cause for arrest on the basis of the facts. And the Sechrist seems to me to be not doing something different than that, but suggesting that when you have the strong odor of an illegal substance, that can be enough. Suggest a crime probably has taken place, and that person probably committed it.
Right. I think that's absolutely right.
You know, counsel, I've written a few of these opinions over the years, and as I recall your pedigree, you were around here assisting with that also. So you know where the holding comes in an opinion, right? In fact, I won't go into this. You know where the holding comes in an opinion. And the holding here is you need unmistakable. You know, I hear the word strong. And, of course, the degree of the odor is a relevant factor, but you kind of pushed back when I asked you. You started out with it has to be a strong odor, and then it's a holding, you said, and boy, it's not in the holding paragraphs. Unmistakable is. So what are you going with?
Sure. unmistakable. I don't think that they are mutually exclusive. I mean, the language that is most pertinent to this situation uses strong, but I do believe that it was unmistakable in this case, too. And the reason that I say that is because unmistakability is sort of a guidepost for circuit courts when they are assessing the credibility of the officer. Do they believe what the officer is saying when they say that they smell the odor of marijuana? And here in this case, the circuit court, even though it did ultimately suppress the evidence, it made initial factual findings about the odor of marijuana being strong to Officer Abel, mm-hmm. and it being confirmed by a second officer. Now, while it didn't expressly use the words unmistakable, I don't believe that that's a requirement.
I think
but that's consistent with the finding of unmistakability.
One of the considerations, not holdings, but considerations in Sechrist, is the court, in assessing the credibility of the officer's testimony regarding the strength of the order, odor, rather, should take into consideration the training and expertise, right? Was there any testimony here offered regarding the training and expertise upon which the judge could assess the credibility?
No, and I would acknowledge that that's a shortcoming of this record. But I think that it's another thing altogether to say that the absence of such testimony should mean that the Court of Appeals or that the Supreme Court should invalidate a finding by the court, by the circuit court, that the officer was credible.
Well, may the record reflect, if I gave an opinion regarding the strength of marijuana, the record should reflect that it would be incredible.
I mean,
I don't have the expertise.
Okay. I didn't ask.
And I might not tell. So.
I did want to say that that's one of the things that's disturbing about the Court of Appeals opinion in this case, is that it reaches out and it decides a question that is for the circuit court to decide. It decides that that it was not unmistakable, as if that were a legal standard. It's not a legal standard. It's not probable cause. It's a guidepost for circuit courts to help assess the credibility of the officers at the hearing. And here, those credibility determinations were in favor of the officers, despite the fact that the evidence was ultimately suppressed.
Ryan, just to make sure I'm getting your argument, what you're saying is, yes, Sechrist uses unmistakable, but that ultimately is a factual finding if that's what the officers smelled or not, right?
Right.
And then that's sort of a giving the trial courts sort of the you call it a guidepost for their sort of factual determination in the record.
Yeah. No, I think that's right, and it's understandable why the court did that. It's because here, if you're going to rely primarily on one factor, you should be pretty certain about that factor. And so you want officers to be certain in their identification. Now, I would say that there are certain judges around the state, particularly I would guess younger judges, that are most likely able to identify the odor of marijuana, that most likely believe that the odor of marijuana is something that we're all familiar with. And so there may be some judges that do not require training and expertise from police officers in establishing they believe that they're able to detect it. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, implicit also in an officer's testimony that they identified the odor of marijuana is the suggestion that they're familiar with it. And I believe that here the court wasn't troubled by the fact that there was no testimony as to their training and experience. I think for many people, certainly I would guess many circuit court judges believe that the odor is something that most people are most likely familiar with, the distinctive and easily recognizable odor.
I have a question from Justice Kurofsky. Do you acknowledge that CBD and THC smell the same?
They have no smell, and so in that sense, I acknowledge that.
Okay, and so if that's the case, then how could it be unmistakable? Since if they smell similarly, how could it be unmistakable smell of marijuana as opposed to...
Well, I mean...
CBD.
There are a couple of ways to look at that. First of all, even when this court adopted Sechrist, there were likely other scents that smelled similar to or were almost unmistakable from the odor of marijuana. Now here we now have something that's legal that smells like marijuana, that's from the same plant. But without any kind of a showing as to the frequency with which people are consuming CBD by smoking it in the form of hemp in their vehicles, I would say that you don't have enough to overturn Seacrest. You can't say that it's really unworkable in practice anymore if, in fact, there's no showing at all that people in any significant numbers are actually smoking hemp to get CBD in their vehicles. I think, and that's really the way that courts have looked at this across the country that have looked at this issue right now. The fact of legal hemp does not undermine probable cause, which of course does not require certainty. It doesn't require beyond a reasonable doubt. It only requires probable cause to believe that crime is afoot.
Right. The problem lies in this unmistakable language.
Sure. And if you want to adopt the most narrow definition of unmistakable, as the Court of Appeals did, then yes, it couldn't be unmistakable, because by the Court of Appeals definition of unmistakable, it means incapable of being mistaken for something else. But of course, unmistakable has other definitions that I discussed in my brief. And one is that it's distinctive, easily recognizable, such that it's unlikely to be mistaken for something else. And I think that that's the fact here. There is no showing, again, that people are, I would say, I think this is far from the record, but I would say that CBD is consumed in gummy form, in food additives, in vaping, in other ways in which it would not be detectable. But I do not think that any showing has been made that people are consuming CBD by smoking it regularly in their vehicles with anything like the frequency with which we've seen people smoking marijuana. So without a showing like that, I just don't see how you can say that there's no longer probable cause to search and arrest based on the odor of marijuana alone or primarily.
That's quite an assertion. Pretty general, pretty broad. You think, in other words, there has to be some empirical data before you can find that address the issue of unmistakable? That's pretty broad. Come on.
And none of that's in this.
You can do better.
None of that's in this record, either, right?
No record here. I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the weakness in my argument here. What I will say is that because we're here in the Supreme Court, and ultimately what Moore is requesting is essentially for this court to adopt the Court of Appeals opinion as law. To do that, you would have to overturn Seacrest. To overturn Seacrest and to depart from stare decisis, you would have to rely on one of the grounds for departing from stare decisis. The burden is on the defendant at that point to show that that the standard is unworkable in process. And here, I don't think that can be shown on this record.
Why would we have to overturn Seacrest? Because Seacrest talks about making sure that person is linked to the marijuana and talks about another explanation and different things to look at. And so we know that he actually has a CBD vape, and we know that this vehicle is not his, and some of these other factors. Seacrest is... just Fourth Amendment law. It's not some standalone case, right? So why would we have to overturn that? There's a line in Seacrest, the probability diminishes if the odor is not strong or recent. Who knows how recent this is? If it's not near the person, if the person offers a reasonable explanation, those are just some of the factors. But why would we have to overturn Seacrest?
You would have to overturn Seacrest to adopt a holding that's similar to what the Court of Appeals analysis.
We don't have to do that, though.
No, you don't. I agree.
So we could find that
if you were to follow the circuit court's analysis and say something along the lines of the factors on which the circuit court relied, the fact that the vehicle was not his own, that it was borrowed from his brother, and that the odor, at least as to one officer, apparently dissipated from his person when he stepped out of the vehicle, I would argue that that's still, and I think that the reason that the Court of Appeals didn't rely on that ground, even though it would be much easier for it to have done so, is because he was still the sole occupant and the driver of the vehicle associated with that odor. And the language in Sechrist that talks about the odor not being associated with the person, I think that's most applicable when you have more than one individual in the car, and when they step out and you can only smell this odor on one of the people, then that would be a relevant factor. But here, he's the driver and the sole occupant, and really the person that's most logical to associate with the odor. And because he is the last person to have driven it, he's the person who was there in the vehicle when the officers stopped it and they detected the odor of marijuana. Now, of course, his explanation is possible, that it could have been, perhaps there was marijuana there previously, but that's not the explanation that the officers have to accept. Officers don't have to accept an innocent explanation. All that they need is probable cause. And here I think that here ultimately the Court of Appeals didn't accept the circuit court's analysis and went with something completely different. And I can see why, because ultimately the circuit court's analysis isn't defensible either. So there are four legal mistakes in the Court of Appeals opinion. I think I've touched on most of them here, but I'd like to get back to them a little bit. I'm going to skip to the second point, which is that the Court of Appeals' narrow reliance on unmistakable, its narrow definition, is inconsistent with probable cause itself. Probable cause is a probabilistic determination made by officers. It admits the possibility that of a reasonable mistake made by officers in the course of an investigation. And so here, a definition that says it's incapable of being something else would be inconsistent with probable cause. So, the third point is that the treatment of unmistakability as a question of law. I think that I've adequately made that point, but it is a question of fact to be determined by the circuit court. And fourth, the court misread Sechrist to mandate training and experience testimony in all cases. Again, I don't believe that that's necessary, and we've discussed some of those reasons here. Some judges may not believe that it's necessary for such testimony because the odor is, in fact, something that most persons are able to identify, having had some experience in the world detecting that odor, whether they've consumed marijuana or not. So,
counsel, you eschew the definition of the Court of Appeals of unmistakable, saying it's inconsistent with the low threshold of probable cause. But as I see it, your proffered definition is also inconsistent. I'm paraphrasing your definition, more likely than not, more likely. Well, that's inconsistent with, a probable cause also, isn't it?
More likely than not?
Yes, that's right. More likely than not, usually under a case law, is 50% or more, right? More likely than not is, generally, I consider more likely than not above the standard of probable cause, which generally is considered a pretty low standard.
Right. Again, officers are not required to accept a innocent explanation. And if you have two explanations, an innocent one and one that is inculpatory, officers may accept the inculpatory explanation, the two things being equal. So if that answers your question as to 50% or 51%, I think that that's correct, that probable cause can be based on believing an inference of guilt as opposed to, and here there's no assertion. Again, on these facts, there's no assertion that hemp was what was being consumed. It's all theoretical. It's all based not on what actually happened in this stop. It's based on coming up with explanations after the fact for what officers must think. Now, what an officer must think in the field in this case is because when they've confronted the individual and said, we smell the odor of marijuana. The individual doesn't say, oh, it's actually hemp. Why would the officer believe that it was hemp if the individual didn't ever assert that it was? It makes no sense. I think that this court should affirm Sechrist, and I believe that its test is still good law, and so I would ask the court to do that, and I will step down.
Thank you.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. As the adage goes, if you can't win the game, change the rules. This case is a delineation of that very adage. The state at the suppression hearing did not meet its burden under the unmistakability standard rendered in Sechrist or under the totality of circumstances assessment that the circuit court went through and the appellate court reaffirmed. Now the state comes before this court urging it to create or winnow down the unmistakability standard, stating that a possibility of the odor should be sufficient or to make nebulous what has already been clear. Justice Bradley, to go to your point when you're regarding unmistakability, it is respondent's position that unmistakable not only was the intention of this court, but it was used 5 times throughout the Supreme Court's opinion. It was not easily usurped or interchanged with strong. This court repeatedly asserted unmistakable, and it doubled down on unmistakable by stating, I believe on page 12 of the opinion, that in a determination of unmistakability, it is important. It did not say useful. It did not say it may be helpful. This court stated, quote, it is important in these cases to determine the extent of an officer's training with an expertise with the odor of marijuana, specifically so that this court could rely on that officer's credibility when it makes the detection and notes it to be marijuana. We know what credibility means because a long-used jury instruction, 300, in the Wisconsin jury instruction says credibility is the believability and weight that we give a witness's testimony.
Counsel, do you believe that Sechrist does something different than a standard probable cause analysis, or that it sets up new barriers, evidentiary, otherwise, that are above and beyond the traditional probable cause analysis for arrest?
I would say yes and no, Your Honor. Specifically, and if the court would indulge me, Sechrist, when it broached its opinion, this court actually almost came to the point of a lamentation. It stated at the beginning of the opinion, it would be easier if the officer, after smelling marijuana, would have searched the vehicle, found the contraband, and then arrested the individual. But here, because the officer in Sechrist smelled marijuana and then arrested the individual, this court said, now we are confronted with the question, can one have probable cause to arrest based upon odor alone? And the court answered that in 2 parts. It said, yes, if that odor is unmistakable and it is sufficiently tethered or linked to the suspect. So, and then it defines unmistakable bearing on the officer's credibility. It was not contested in Sechrist whether or not this was the odor of burned marijuana. But this court repeatedly says unmistakable. Now, it did not define what unmistakable meant, but contextually was clear. Unmistakable has to mean unmistakable, Your Honor. So therefore, it is not a possibility. And if there is no definition that this court rendered, then we go by the common understanding and even the Oxford definition, the definition quoted by the appellate court and even in the petitioner's brief, that it means that it cannot be mistaken for something else. Why is that standard more stringent? Because we are doing just as this court lamented in Sechrist. You are arresting a citizen based on the odor alone. Now, in most cases, you have much more than the odor.
Counsel, the factual, I'm going to go to the trial court's opinion. The trial court obviously did a hearing and made some factual findings, and I want to know what you think we should do with this and how you think this relates to what you've just been discussing. But the trial court, you know, here's this evidence and says there was a strong smell of marijuana. And then again, a strong odor of marijuana. And then again, both officers note the strong marijuana smell emanating from the vehicle. So the trial court, you know, hears this evidence and says the officers believed what they were smelling was marijuana and it was a strong smell. Do you think what do you want us to do with that? Your opposing counsel would say that's a factual finding, and that's one that we take as a given, and that helps inform the analysis of whether probable cause was sufficient. What do you want us to do with that?
Specifically, Your Honor, what I'd like this court to do with that is take it just as the circuit court said in its decision on pages 1-4. In that first page, the circuit court specifically states that based on the strong odor, the officers had probable cause to search Moore and his vehicle, which they did. Now, I will be quite candid with this court. The circuit court's decision never used the term unmistakable, and the circuit court's decision does somewhat is not always written with clarity. But again, the circuit court does make it clear that it believed it was insufficiently tethered or linked under Sechrist to Mr. Moore. So I believe even the circuit court under the unmistakability standard finds the state to be lacking, just as the appellate court did under a different basis. The appellate court said we don't even have to reach that second question because unmistakability could never be found on this record.
Yeah, it did do that, but let me just drill into that a little bit. The trial court says, yeah, there was a strong odor of marijuana. Sechrist says that can be enough, but we don't think there was enough of a link. But that's a little bit different. I mean, they seem to suggest it's clearly marijuana, but we can't, you know, insufficient connection to him or there was innocent explanations. So, but it still seems to take as a given that it was marijuana. That's what the officer smelled. It repeated at least three times that there was a strong smell, strong odor of marijuana. Both officers smelled it. That's what they smelled.
Yes, Your Honor, I would answer that in two parts. So again, the circuit court said based on the odor of marijuana, there was probable cause to search, not probable cause to arrest, which is under the Sechrist standard. But secondly, the reason why I say the circuit court wanes is because it also weighs in and says, due to the state's assertion of the indistinguishability of the odor, it specifically said that cuts both ways. And that is why I say I don't believe with reading the circuit court's decision, you can say that the circuit court found it to be unmistakable because it even accepts the state's assertion in its surreply brief where it specifically says the odor coming from the vape pen could have also been responsible for the odor that was being emitted in the vehicle. And that is why the circuit court in this decision says even accepting the state's assertion of the indistinguishability of that odor, and the moment the court accepts that, there can be no finding of unmistakability under Sechrist. The court, if anything, the circuit court says there is enough to search him, but you do not have probable cause to arrest him, which is the unmistakability standard that was espoused in Sechrist. And that is where the state was found lacking. This record is barren and devoid of anything that a neutral and detached magistrate could assess and make a determination that an officer could credibly detect the odor of marijuana. Now, I will state in Sechrist, while it does not define what unmistakability says, it does say that the neutral and detached magistrate is to assess, and it never says it's an ipse dixit standard, which is what we believe would be the thrust of the petitioner's argument. It is not enough for an officer to come in and say, yes, I smelled it, and the court is to rubber stamp it. In Sechrist, this court literally guides courts in assessing how do you make a determination of that odor. And to petitioner's other point about the explanation given, it is quite clear in case law that an officer does not have to accept an innocent explanation. But again, I want to situate that. In Sechrist, that explanation goes to the linkage. This court says that you can diminish the linkage for probable cause to the suspect if a lawful or actually says reasonable explanation is given for the odor. On the facts of this case, there were two. It was not contested that it was not Mr. Moore's vehicle. And two, even one officer confirmed that once he exited the vehicle, that odor was not emanating from him. Therefore, Sechrist's own standards as it goes to the linkage, which can only be linked after you have an unmistakable odor, the state failed. And that's what I'm saying. It failed in multiple respects under the Sechrist standard. And this court has made clear what unmistakable meant. The circuit court did not inartedly say that it was unmistakable. It said there was enough based on the odor to search. Sechrist was confronted with the question, is the odor sufficient to arrest an individual? And it is a stringent standard because you're doing it on odor alone. In most cases, and I can say this from someone who's done it on both sides of the aisle, officers have much more than odor. You have indicia. You have impairment. You have baggage. You may have a scale. You have all of these other things that are weighed. So the court said the reason why this weighs heavier is because we're going to be arresting an individual solely upon the basis of odor. And again, to reach a point that that was brought up while petitioner was up, when the court repeatedly reminds us that probable cause is not technical, it's not a technical standard, and it's not one of certainty. If the court would indulge me, if I would just wax historical very quickly about what the court said in Sechrist. In Sechrist, again, it was not contested that it was the odor of burned marijuana. After that, petitioner, which would have been Sechrist, had raised the challenge that it should be insufficient that that officer knew it was burned marijuana and it was connected to the suspect. They borrowed from the Michigan Supreme Court in Hibble, where it stated that the officers also have to have training to tell us when was the last time the marijuana was burned, so we know when the crime occurred. And this court said, while we respect the reasoning of our sister court, we will not adopt it. Probable cause has never been that technical within our state. So it was a remonstration against asking for something more of the officers. But it was never a remonstration against unmistakable. It never said one time in the opinion that unmistakable does not mean unmistakable. And just to Justice Bradley's point, it said in the holding, because an officer with 23 years experience, a veteran, detected the unmistakable odor of marijuana, and not only was it unmistakable, odor of marijuana, it was coming from the vehicle in the seat where the suspect was sitting, that was sufficient and probable cause to arrest.
Should we take any consideration of the fact that the officer saw him throw something out the window, some liquid out the window, before he stopped his vehicle, and the fact that he had a vaping pipe or device in the car?
Absolutely, Your Honors. And I believe the circuit court actually looked at all of those facts when it rendered its totality of circumstances analysis and still found the state lacking. Number one, while the state did not put forth an actual argument at the circuit court in its record, specifically the circuit court found that the liquid was never connected to the probable cause analysis. It was never testified or argued to be, and it was an odorless liquid by the evidence that was adduced at the hearing. And therefore, there could not be one finding one way or another. And so the circuit court found that even under the totality of circumstances analysis, that would be insufficient. As far as the vape pen, he stated, Mr. Moore, Your Honor, has stated that it was for vaping CBD. The circuit court found that the vaping pen, again, lack of argument from the state, who has the burden at a suppression hearing, because that runs through, and I believe even in the appellate court's opinion, that the vape pen was not also even sufficiently tethered to be a probable cause, because I believe just as Justice Dallas said, probable cause is not in the ether. It's probable cause to have committed a specific crime. So probable cause for possession of a controlled substance, there was no connection. The vape pen was for CBD. They did not prove or state or even assert otherwise. So even in the circuit court's decision, it said, while you say we shouldn't accept what Mr. Moore says, you have not offered any alternative argument. And if I was to borrow from the affirmative court, the appellate court said when they raised a new argument on appeal as to you could make an inference that he was trying to dispel of something criminal or engaged in scurrilous conduct, the appellate court said it would be unfair to the parties for us to rely on an argument that you didn't give your opponent an opportunity to rebut. Because in the adversarial system, the contemplation was that both parties have an onus, and that is what would compel them to make their arguments, and a neutral and detached magistrate would assess the record in front of them. It is not going to assist the parties in meeting their burden. The state did little to nothing to meet its burden, to connect the dots, to make any reasonable inferences, and then it raises new arguments to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals still goes through a totality of circumstances analysis and finds them lacking, and then it cries to this court, and by cry I mean in the old English definition. I don't mean that in a detrimental way. So then it prays for this court to address something as if it is unclear. Let's be quite clear that for 24 years, Sechrist has been utilized by practitioners and judges, and it's usually to the chagrin of the defense. But now that the state is found lacking, we are to believe that there's a problem if we say unmistakable means unmistakable. There's a problem if we say that the courts need some indicia to rely on an officer's ability to credibly detect the odor of marijuana. And we say not so. Sechrist can be reaffirmed, and the lower court should be affirmed on this record that is barren for anything for this court to hang its hat on and trying to overrule any part. And we've always said, and by we I mean this court has handed down, that the circuit court is in the best place to determine. That is the theater of the contention. We are not supposed to be at this level trying to recreate a record. We as practitioners have a number of rules if we are unclear about what the circuit court said. We can ask it to clarify its opinion. We can do a motion for reconsideration if we believe there's a misapplication of law or something that goes to an error of fact. None of that was done here. And that would have been the state's onus at the circuit court level. It does not get another kick at the cat by trying to make nebulous what is clear, unmistakable, that surely an officer on his first day on the beat cannot have the same credibility in detecting an odor as an officer with 23 years of experience. So respondents don't come here stating that there has to be a certain number of years, but respondents are reverberating what this court said in Sechrist, that it is important for a circuit court to determine an officer's training and experience related to the odor of marijuana or a controlled substance and making a determination of unmistakability.
You know, counsel, Justice Dallet had asked earlier about the changing circumstances. We live in a world where it feels like marijuana is pretty ubiquitous now. Maybe in a way it wasn't 20 years ago or 25 years ago. It seems that when it relates to what a reasonable law enforcement officer might know or be able to identify, that might cut the other way. I suspect, and I could be wrong, but pretty much every law enforcement officer in this state can smell marijuana and be pretty capable of doing that in a way they might not have been able to 25 years ago. Just need to go to a coffee shop in Madison, and plenty of people can give you that identification. I wonder if you have a thought on that, because Sechrist does talk about experience and expertise. It strikes me that pretty much every law enforcement officer is going to recognize that smell. Maybe not with the same level of certainty, and that's a question for the fact finder and credibility, and that can be attacked. But I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I absolutely agree that pretty much, probably not even just an officer, I believe a layperson could probably recognize the odor of THC, especially at this point. I do want to take a step back and address what Your Honor has stated while petitioner was up. But more to your point, I believe that that's all, as the court said, is going to be done on the record, and the circuit court is going to address it. So again, for a circuit court to make a determination or weigh, are we going to believe that that odor is unmistakable in this case? Because if Sechrist makes anything clear, it is a fact-specific scenario. And that's why in its holding, it laid out the facts. 23 years experience, unmistakable odor coming from the vehicle, emanating from where he was seated, also on him. And it said a man speaking with halted speech. It is a fact-specific scenario. So even now, Sechrist stands because it's going to be fact-specific. So it can be an officer. That officer could be someone with 1 year of training or 6 months or came on the job knowing it. What we're saying is this court doesn't even have to go that far because the record is devoid of anything. I believe the appellate court said it quite accurately, that the only thing that was adduced at the suppression hearing was that the officer had maybe been engaged in at least one traffic stop. There was nothing else for a court, again, a neutral and detached magistrate, to look at the record and say, I believe that officer noted the unmistakable odor of marijuana. And that's all that we're asking, is that this court actually defer to those findings of fact by the circuit court, that it had nothing else to go on. I mean, the record is devoid of anything. And that's all. So whether it be now or back in 1999, to answer what Your Honor, to my second point of what Your Honor said while petitioner was speaking, we do believe, because tying in Justice Dallet's point, with the legalization of certain products since 2017, in 1999, the odor, because tetrahydrocannabinol in all of its forms was illegal. Therefore, any odor connected to that would unequivocally be an odor that was connected to criminal activity being afoot, right? So now once we get to 2023, after 2017, that odor, if anything, might have less weight because THC can be legal up to a certain amount in CBD or hemp products in Wisconsin. We don't need to go, but what I'm saying is the court doesn't even have to address that on this record. This was not a close call. This was not a call of whether or not the officer absolutely smelled THC or whether or not it could have been anything else, even with petitioner admitting that it could not distinguish the odor, which definitely undermines an unmistakability finding, unequivocally. What we're saying is on this record, the court doesn't even have to do that much work. All it has to do is look at the record and say there is no way we could find other than what the circuit court did. There is no way you could meet your burden under totality of circumstances, because what runs through this entire process is that this is an adversarial process where the parties have to meet their burden. And de novo review is not a wink and a nod for petitioner to add arguments that the circuit court did not get to entertain. And that is what's literally before this court. There were arguments introduced that the circuit court did not even get to rebut or didn't even get to assess. And more did not get to rebut. And that is not the purpose of de novo review. This court engages in de novo review to make sure that historical facts aren't aligned with constitutional principles. But we do not get to raise new arguments. That is all done at the circuit court level. And that is why the appellate court affirmed it, and it declined to engage in a new argument that the petitioner rose at the appellate court level regarding that there was a possibility of criminal activity if you dispelled the liquid. And the appellate court said, wait. You never rose that argument, and to ask us to address it now, an argument, not simply the fact that the circuit court had addressed, but a new argument, would be unfair to the parties. So that is why on these bases we are asking that this court, one, reaffirm Sechrist. We are not stating that Sechrist is bad law. We are not stating that the court even has to entertain.
But counsel, it sounds like you are reading Sechrist to impose a higher burden with respect to probable cause than the United States Supreme Court has imposed. It is supposed to be, it's been described as, I think, by this court, as a common sense standard that deals with probabilities, not hard certainties. So the police officers don't have to rule out an innocent explanation for the odor unless we're reading Sechrist to impose a higher burden than has been imposed by the United States Supreme Court for probable cause.
I would respectfully disagree with Your Honor, Justice Bradley. Specifically, I would say all we're asking is for this court to reverberate what it stated in Sechrist. This court stated unmistakable five times. This court never stated that there was a winnowing down of that definition. So if this court was to challenge that or redefine Sechrist, it would have to go back and look at what its language was in Sechrist. And again, this court addressed it, as I stated, after lamenting that he did not search before he arrested, that this is based on a rare number of cases where we are arresting citizens on the odor alone. That is why we're requiring that it be unmistakable and sufficiently linked to that suspect. Again, this does not happen in the majority of cases, and it does not leave the state without recourse. That is why the court, still in secret, said you can. It does not disturb the totality of circumstances analysis. That is why the circuit court went through it and still found the state wanting of sufficient information, articulable facts, and evidence to meet that standard.
But your interpretation does seem to elevate unmistakable odor above any totality of circumstances test.
I would disagree. I don't think it elevates it above any totality of circumstances test. It recognizes a very small and narrow category of cases in which you could have probable cause to arrest based upon one circumstance, while the well-established totality of circumstances test says under all of these circumstances, when we look at the totality of them, did you have probable cause? I believe there is a reason why it is more stringent. There is a reason for that very specific language and even the way the court went through its opinion in Sechrist, and that is because we are doing something very different when we tell officers that you can arrest citizens solely based on the odor. It specifically says, I believe, in Sechrist, that when you talk about odor being a probability, it has to be more than a possibility. So if we go by petitioner's quote, it would be winnowing it down to simply a possibility that it may be an unmistakable odor. And specifically, this court at page 212 said the unmistakable odor, which goes to probability, is higher than possibility. That is this court's word. So it's not enough to simply say, I think it might be marijuana. It has to be marijuana if that's all you have to go on.
Well, now you're saying it has to be, so it's not even a probability. It must be a certainty. Is that your argument?
I'm not saying certainty. Forgive my emphasis. What I'm saying is unmistakable means unmistakable by this court. This court did not give an alternative definition. And just as the appellate court said, the common sense definition of unmistakable, which is what all of the citizens had to go on for the past 24 years, means that which would not be confused or mistaken for something else.
That
this court
like
did not
the
give
certainty that the United States Supreme Court says is not necessary in order to find probable cause.
Again, the unmistakability, Your Honor, simply goes to the odor. It doesn't go to the linkage. It simply says it has to be sufficiently linked. So again, it's not asking for a certainty to meet probable cause. It is asking for an unmistakable finding of that odor. And again, this court said it. This court said it five times. So it's not my words. It is the words of this court. And this court did not give a specific denotation of unmistakable, which means we're left with a common sense understanding. And I would diverge from what petitioner put in their brief regarding a certain musician's music and using that as unmistakable. I think we all know what it means when something is unmistakable. And I think that's what this court was relying on. And it was not in contention in Sechrist whether or not. No parties contended that this was burned marijuana. But this court said it five times and used that word, and it gave us no other definition. So this court could use this opportunity to winnow that down or to define it. But petitioner still does not prevail under that, because as has repeatedly been shown and demonstrated, the record is devoid of anything to hang your hat on to overturn the lower court. Simply put, the petitioner failed at the circuit court hearing. It did not meet a standard. The appellate court affirmed that, and the appellate court did it on unmistakability. While it was a little unclear what the circuit court said, but what was clear from the circuit court is that it was not sufficiently linked under Sechrist, and it still failed under totality of circumstances. Surely that was not erroneous on this record.
It seems to me, I'm sorry, were you done?
Go ahead, please.
It seems to me the trial court was pretty clear it was marijuana. They said it over and over again. The trial court's decision was entirely based on the fact that it was insufficiently linked to Mr. Moore. They had no question that the officer smelled marijuana. They just said, because there was an innocent explanation, the trial court said because it was an innocent explanation and didn't smell it on him, that is not enough to meet the standards. I understand it's legal analysis there, and we can do that. But as far as the question of whether the officers smelled marijuana, trial court did not seem to express any hesitancy and seems to make a finding of fact that that's exactly what the officers smelled. Why doesn't that handle that part of the analysis for us?
If the court wanted it to, it could, because as the court just stated, the trial court also found that the linkage was still failing. So that's why it failed under the Sechrist standard. While I'm saying it is unclear, and not only because what I want to be clear is I'm not stating that circuit courts have to use the perfect language every time, right? They are burdened with doing a lot, with a number of cases. But what I am saying is it's hard to find an unmistakability finding when the trial court on page 2 of its decision, I believe that's record 16, it says the state's concession of the THC and CBD odor being indistinguishable. The court said we can accept that, but that cuts both ways. So if the court accepts that concession, then I don't believe that aligns with an unmistakability finding. However, I do agree with this court that if it wanted to read it that way, because again, I can't state, if I was to be candid, that the trial court's decision was quite clear. But I could say, we could agree that the court found it to be unmistakable, even though it only said they had probable cause to search. It did not find it was unmistakable in the odor and the linkage. The circuit court still found that it was insufficiently tethered. So the linkage part, because under Sechrist, you need both. It needs to be the unmistakable odor, and it needs to be sufficiently linked to that suspect. And the circuit court did not find that. And it found under totality of circumstances that the state was lacking. And again, the appellate court, while there's much ado about the appellate court, and I believe the two certified questions before this court have to do with the appellate court, if one thing is clear, and this court has said it repeatedly, it owes the appellate court no deference. I believe it said in Cook v. Cook in 97 and all of its progeny that the appellate court is an error-correcting court, that this court owes no deference. If it defers to any court, it is the circuit court to its factual findings unless they are clearly erroneous. And then it engages in a de novo review. So it is of much less weight what the appellate court said in an unpublished opinion when it had its thoughtful musings. What is important is that the circuit court made factual findings that were affirmed by the appellate court. And on this record, I do not believe a court could find otherwise credibly. And that is why we're saying that Sechrist should be reaffirmed and the lower courts should be affirmed, because petitioner did not meet its burden. And that's all this case is about. It's not about the clarity of Sechrist, what happened in 2017. This court could use that as an opportunity to address that. But we don't even need to go that far on this record. This court doesn't have to work that hard. And to revert to a colloquialism, if it ain't broke, it's been used for 24 years. This time is to the chagrin of the state. And that is not sufficient enough reason to rewrite Sechrist or to overturn the lower courts. And if there are no further questions...
Thank you.
a lot to respond to, but I have 5 points that I'd like to make in response. First, thank you to opposing counsel for reminding me of a portion of the Sechrist decision that addresses one of your questions, Justice Dallet, about the odor of marijuana, you know, whether the officers are required to determine exactly when the odor was present. Sechrist itself says that they are not required to determine exactly when the odor was present, in the case of smoked marijuana, when it was smoked. That would be requiring more than what this court required in Sechrist, and you would have
right.
to overturn that portion of Sechrist as well.
Understood.
It didn't follow the Michigan Supreme Court's decision in Hilberg.
Understood, but probable cause is that a crime has been committed. And we're not talking about a crime a week ago or 3 days ago, right?
Sure, yes. The second point is that it's about unmistakability. Now, when the trial court, in its decision on the suppression hearing, found that there was enough for a search in the vehicle, what it was saying is that the odor was unmistakable as to the officers, because both search of a vehicle and arrest and search incident to arrest require the odor to be unmistakable. That's in Sechrist. So we have a determination from the court based in part on the fact that it said that there was enough for a search of the vehicle, and also simply on its determinations that it believed the officers. Third, counsel for Moore says that Sechrist should be reaffirmed. We agree completely, but if you adopt his position as to what Sechrist means, Sechrist will be a dead letter. It won't stand for anything anymore, because the odor of marijuana will not be sufficient to make a search or arrest based on the odor alone. And that's Sechrist's primary holding. So Sechrist will not have much effect if you adopt counsel's position. Fourth, about the state making new arguments in the Court of Appeals, what the state did in the Court of Appeals was to take a look at the facts that were known to the officers at the time and try to tease out inferences based on those facts. The fact that they were not argued in the circuit court shouldn't preclude a court on de novo review determining what officers, based on the facts of the officers at the time, what reasonable inferences they could draw. It's an objective standard. So I believe the Court of Appeals inappropriately applied forfeiture in that case and should consider the two additional facts, including the liquid being tossed out the window, which was a non-alcoholic liquid, did not have an odor, and they were unable to tie it. You know, once the officer sees Moore throw the liquid out the window, she's thinking that this is a drunk driving stop. Turns out that it's not that. She doesn't smell that. She smells the odor of marijuana. And eventually, she finds during the pat-down the vape pen. I think reasonable inferences could support the use of THC from the vape pen and the liquid being thrown out the window.
Also, he denied that he threw anything out the window.
Sure.
And nobody seems to make much of that. If it was just nothing that he was throwing out and had nothing to do with a controlled substance, why deny it? Yeah, I did. I just had this, you know, this leftover water junk in my car, and I wanted
sure,
to get
yeah,
rid of it.
Sure, yeah, right. There's an inference there that can be drawn of guilt from his response.
I didn't follow you on that last thing you said about the vape pen being found on him. You're talking about raw marijuana in a car is what they think they smell. So what does the vape pen have to do with anything exactly?
It's not directly connected. I'm not arguing that it is. I'm just arguing that there's another inference of the use of THC in another form. I'm not arguing that it builds on the odor, because there's nothing in the record about the odor of THC. And in fact, the parties agree that THC and CBD themselves have no odor, and they were
so
just used.
So it can't form the basis for the probable cause for this arrest.
I'm simply saying that it's an additional fact that suggests THC use. That's all. But finally, and this is really my most important point here, what I'd like to leave you with is that the Court of Appeals opinion contains numerous legal errors. No matter what the holding of this court is as to the outcome of this particular case, the state asks you to look carefully at the Court of Appeals opinion and correct those errors, because we need to have clarity. These traffic stops happen all the time across the state, And we need to have clarity for law enforcement, for judges, for the bench and bar. So with that, I would ask reverse the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Very interesting oral argument this morning. We appreciate you being here with us today. We appreciate your comments and your arguments. And we're going to adjourn and reconvene when counsel are present for the second case this morning. Have a good day.